projection. So we're assuming we have to operate these things over the life cycle. We also know that the science is going to continue to find new chemical variants that aren't currently regulated to be potentially regulated if they're linked by epidemiological data. And so we'll continually have to evaluate whether our treatment protocols work for those and to what extent. One of the good things I think about going with the media that we selected is it did have a more of a broad spectrum effect. And the initial issue might be as we get into the shorter chain molecules, if those are regulated, we may have to buy more resin essentially because they may, we may expend resin at a more rapid rate to keep those up. But as far as what we have right now, we think these projected costs are adequate, and we're going to just have to keep monitoring it as we go forward, looking at the changes in the regulations, the changes in the source concentrations, and make adjustments as we go. Sorry, it's a long answer, but a great question.
No, thank you for the answer. And then back to Captain PFAS. The number, I mean, we're talking about PFAS and a couple of other variants, but the total universe of chemicals of concern, of emergent concern, is quite large. Can you speak to that for just a second? In other words, a year ago, in a board meeting, I mentioned this was just one, PFAS was just one family, and we've got this huge array of chemicals that we're going to be facing and having to pay for. We're throwing down $106 million and paying a little over $1 million a month, and that's going to drive our ratepayers crazy, but there's not much we can do about it. We were handed this problem. And so I'm trying to get, and I appreciate Mr. Stone's answer there, where broad spectrum resin might actually take care of some of these emerging compounds. But I'm just trying to get my head around, have we done five, and we're corralling five, and we have another 1,600 to go, or what's the relative proportion there?
So, Director Atkins, there's over 3,000 PFAS chemicals. Right now, the analytical method 537.1 can only identify 18 of them. We have been hit with eight. The two most common and the highest levels are the PFOS and PFOA. The PFBS, General Manager Stone alluded to the unfortunate name. It looks like the NL is high enough to where it's not going to be a concern. So we just don't know on that aspect. And to kind of expand on that, you know, if you would have asked me 5 years ago what I thought the biggest issue was going to be, it would have been pharmaceuticals, because that's kind of what the water quality industry or the water quality groups were talking about. And those haven't gone away. We'll still see those. But, you know, we went through a round of explosives. So we sampled for TNT and a variety of other explosives, and that was all because of the perchlorate thing with, I think that was UCMR2. We had some pharmaceuticals that we sampled for. I think it was in three. Now it's PFAS. UCMR is not going away. So when we get to UCMR 10 or 15 or 20, who knows what we'll be looking for then. But as technology improves and science gets better, we're going to be able to identify anything and everything that's in our water.
And UCMR is unregulated contaminant monitoring rule, which is it triennial every 3 years?
Every 5 years.
Every 5 years, EPA releases a list of chemicals that they're concerned about to do monitoring, just to get an idea of how widespread they are. So when we say UCMR, basically we get those instructions every 5 years to sample our sources for those chemicals.
So I'm not going to pepper you with any more questions, but I would like you to please inform me and maybe the other board members if there's a session where we can go and enhance our knowledge, because this is something that's going to impact us for the next decade or maybe two decades. And we all need to be up to speed on this and pharmaceuticals. So please keep us informed as to where we might go to learn more at an appropriate level. Thank you, gentlemen. Nice job.
Mr. Martin, I have a follow-up question.
Go ahead.
I thought Director Bronstein asked such a good question about why they are taking it out of state, but I'm not quite sure that she got the full answer on it, because I remember, if I remember correctly, at one of the Southern California Water Dialogue sessions, Orange County made a presentation, and one of the big issues was what to do with the resin after they had collected all of this stuff. And although a burning, of course, is going to create air pollution, but I don't know if they can capture it, but I certainly would think that that's one of the delays with getting approval in the state of California. But also, the burning creates a concentrated ash, which still has the resin, PFAS in it. And so then they have to get rid of the concentrated ash, which also ends up at a landfill. And it's got to go to a hazardous waste landfill. And so the problem with even getting rid of the resin once you've cleaned up the water is tremendous. But I think there's an air quality issue too, isn't there, Mike?
So when we approached Evoqua and Purolite, those are the two resin manufacturers that's providing for us. We're trying them both out. We asked them what their disposal options were, and they came back to us with landfill and incineration. They provided us the location of where these were. I think this one's going to go to Ohio, if I'm not mistaken. And we actually ran this whole concept by our legal about what was the most, because incineration is more expensive at this point. But they felt, based on all the documentation that was available provided by the company doing the incineration and the company that would landfill it, this seemed to be the best approach for us at this time.
Best approach because just of why?
For cost and long-term liability. I'm sorry, did you get that?
Cost and long-term
liability.
Cost and long-term liability. Yeah, long-term, yeah. Okay.
So to answer your question, Director Planbeck, from my perspective, air pollution and not finding an appropriate location to install an incinerator in California, and actually the permitting delays would probably preclude California from being a waste site or an incineration site for years. And in many cases, the incineration is part of a concrete plant, and the ash from the burning becomes a part of the concrete. So it actually gets entombed. So the concrete ash, the fly ash, is made part of the concrete matrix. And then when you pour a highway, now you've got it entombed and it can never migrate. It just becomes a construction material. That's generally one way they get rid of it. So it does.
Yeah, maybe never migrate. I remember Lockheed thought the trichloroethane wouldn't go through its 2-foot concrete walls when it was degreasing things too. And then lo and behold, it did. So I guess I get a little worried about these things.
This is Joe, Director Planbeck. I would just quickly add that there was someone in my office who, interestingly, had some pretty specific experience with this and deals with toxic materials. And we looked at it, and it's kind of a lesser of two evils type thing. And given the information that we had so far, it seemed like a safer play to go for the incineration, even though it did cost more. I'm happy to provide you after the meeting or tomorrow with the more detailed analysis that he did, which I can't remember off the top of my head, all of it.
Okay, thank you. I'd be interested in seeing that.
Very good. Thank you, Director Planbeck. Director Armitage, you're last, but you'll be first in the next round.
Okay, thank you. So thank you for the presentation. This was very informative. I want to begin by saying I recognize and see how much work and expense is being put into this. And given the significant amount of work that's already being done or will be done to install and maintain the additional equipment to treat the groundwater, I want to ask a question about kind of an indirectly related issue. So one of the top comments that I hear from my fellow community members is that our water is really hard and it impacts our appliances and, you know, everything our water touches if we don't have a softener. So I'm wondering, since the hardness is primarily from groundwater, is there a way we can incorporate solutions to address the hardness as a supplement to the work that's already being done without adding too much additional cost? You know, maybe this is something, if that's a potential solution, that would also make like new rate structures more palatable to the customers as well.
So I guess I'm best equipped to answer this, and I don't know exactly what to say, but there was an approach. If Director DePremio was still on the board, he would chime in as well. When he and I were at Valencia Water Company, we actually looked at installing groundwater softening throughout the entire Valencia service area. We did a pilot program. We estimated that the cost would be around $4 to $7 a month to soften all the groundwater in Valencia service area. We did some public outreach. It seemed to think that that the public would support it. The one issue was it's not a regulatory requirement, and so the funding for that was not really acceptable to the owners of Valencia Water at the time. The other thing is what we heard from some of the public outreach was that they, you know, some people had softeners and they were paying, you know, $60, $70, $80, $90 a month for the exchange canisters. And some people just didn't have anything and they didn't mind the hard water. So it was convincing those people that what we were going to provide them, which doesn't have a health effect, it's more of an aesthetic effect, was to do that. We actually started to look at this when I went over to Newhall County right before the drought, and we were going to do some sort of pilot as well for one of the Newhall wells, and it sort of took a backseat because of the drought and conservation issues. And, you know, we haven't really discussed it here. It's a completely different process. So ion exchange doesn't handle it. It was an upflow reactor that utilizes sand and raising the pH. I would love to do it. I mean, it was a passion of mine back before 2010. From about 2005 to 2009, I pretty much lived and slept and ate and drank soft water, groundwater softening. But it's something we can discuss internally. I just don't know at this point if the added cost that's not a regulatory requirement would be palpable for the community. But it is. It's still to this day the number one complaint that our water quality team gets.
Thank you.
President Martin.
Yes, Vice President Gladbach.
Yeah, I forgot to ask this a while ago. Mike, can you put one part per trillion into perspective? I mean, I've heard some comparisons. I mean, I used to deal with parts per thousand and millions, and trillions is out of my mind.
How many times can I say very, very small, very, very, very? So I've heard this analogy, and I don't know if it's real, but I'll give it anyway because it gives perspective. One grain of sand in the Olympic-sized swimming pool is parts per million. One grain of sand in the Rose Bowl filled is one part per billion. I have yet to, so it's 1,000 times smaller for parts per trillion. So I don't know what the size that would be, but it would be a heck of a lot larger than the Olympic-sized swimming pool, the Rose Bowl. But that's the best I can do at this point.
Thanks, Mike.
Jerry, the comparison I recall was 1 second in 31,000 years.
So yes, I think that was on one of my earlier slides and earlier presentations. I think that's what it was, yeah. It's amazingly small. It's I still can't fathom the fact that we have instrumentation that can measure that small.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Mike and Steve, for the presentation. The numbers, cost numbers are rather sobering, and hopefully we'll get some improved technology as we move forward. But thank you very much. At this point, I would ask, are there any public comments on item 6.2, the PFAS presentation? April, are they on? Is the public unmuted? Cam, do you have a public comment?
Yes. I don't know if I was interfering with someone else.
No, go ahead, please.
Yes. I always find it interesting, and I've been looking at a lot of the PFAS issues, and I know we've been bringing it up through the CAG. And what I find interesting is, in the conversations, and yes, it's going to be very expensive, and why is it always comes back to the ratepayer to pay this? Why aren't you really looking at, and this is one thing that comes up often in our discussions, is it's, well, the ratepayers are going to have to pay this. Why aren't they pursuing the source and filing lawsuits and making them have insurance to pay for this? They're supposed to have insurance. I have not heard one of you take that direction, and I find that disturbing, because the ability to put the expense on the source is where it should be. And like I've always said, we don't drink the water. We haven't for years. And I don't know of anyone that does drink your water. But we still have to have it for watering our lawns and showers and that sort of thing. But I can't understand when it gets so contaminated with something, the cost of cleaning it up, and I'm repeating myself again, is, well, put it on the ratepayers. When you find us, the companies, the water agencies that are putting this water out, find another source for your water then to keep pumping the same wells and stuff that are generating this. Or if you're importing water, make sure it doesn't have it in. I don't see any solutions except, oh, the ratepayers are going to have to pay that. Answer, please.
Thank you, Ms. Noltemeyer. Mr. Stone, within the limits of what we can discuss, is there anything you can provide, Ms. Noltemeyer, in terms of where we might be pursuing cost recovery?
Yes, and I'm a little surprised, but this question was asked at the last board meeting, and I believe I answered it. I'll try again. The agency has filed a suit against the manufacturers of PFAS, and in closed session tonight, we'll be getting an update on the progress of that suit. That's probably the short answer. I think we've already discussed some other aspects of that tonight, with respect to Director Planbeck's question. And the difficulty with this particular contaminant is it is ubiquitous. It's used in hundreds, if not thousands, of different products. And we know there are some targeted areas to look at. We've gone to a product liability approach with our suit here rather than CERCLA at this point. That doesn't preclude potentially looking at that, but based on the data we've gotten, it's so dispersed that it's going to be difficult to find a smoking gun that explains all of the contamination in the valley other than systematic from the prolific use of this and from the use of it through firefighting foams as an example in the case that we're in. Doesn't mean we're doing nothing. It just means we're approaching this in a somewhat methodical way while trying to go ahead and address the problem proactively rather than decommissioning a significant part of the water supply with no plan to move forward and restore it. Thanks.
Thank you, Matt. Are there any other members of the public who would like to comment on item 6.2 tonight? All right, hearing none, we can move on to item 6.3, our third presentation of the evening, status of 2021 water supplies. This is presented by Sarah Flory, unless Mr. Stone wants to have some words of introduction.
No, I just welcome Sarah, and I think this was a agenda request from Director Planbeck and a very good and timely one given the year that we're in. So this was provided at the Water Resources Committee, so there's been a first run on it, and the board will get the supercharged version tonight.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to all the new directors. Matt said, I'm Sarah Flory, and I'm a water resources planner, and I'm going to give you a status of our 2021 water supplies. Next slide, please. So I had planned to include some information on all of our supplies so the new directors could get more familiar, and it's always a good review for the existing directors. You have to hear something like seven times before it really sticks. So I'm going to run through that pretty quickly and then focus more and slow down on the water supply update, but all the information is included in the slides if you, you know, for more detail of what I'm talking about. So I apologize for going really quickly. Next slide, please. So we're going to start with our State Water Project Table A supply. This is imported water from the north. It makes up about 50% of our demands in an average year. It's extremely variable with some of those conditions that I have listed. Our full contracted amount is 95,200 acre feet a year. And then one benefit of this is that we can utilize excess supplies in wet years to store this water in our banking program. Next slide, please. So this is just a graph which shows us our historical State Water Project Table A allocations. The orange line represents our maximum Table A supply. The purple line is our delivery capability report average coming from Department of Water Resources. So this is kind of what we can expect on average with the current conditions. And then the blue bars represent our final allocations each year. So you can see it's all over the place. 2020 was about 20% allocation, and this year, I don't have it on there, but it's a 10% allocation right now. Next slide, please. In addition to our Table A supplies, in years that we do have excess supply, we can have some of that left over in the San Luis Reservoir. And we call that water Article 56 carryover supply. And the agency does a really good job of making sure that we have some of this supply left over in case it's going to be a really dry year next year. So we're always looking 1 year ahead, assuming that it could be a worst case scenario. And so Article 56 carryover comes in handy when we get into those situations. So the balance for 2021, starting this year, is about 13,500 acre feet, which is pretty incredible seeing as we had a very dry year last year. One of the things to note about Article 56 is that it is subject to spill, which means that if we do get a lot of rain towards the end of the year and San Luis starts getting full, we could lose all of our Article 56 carryover. It just kind of goes away from our account and goes into the state's account. Kind of a water change up there. So it is a bit of a balancing risk with spill and looking at alternative water supply actions. Next slide, please. Next is our BVRRB supply. So this is our Buena Vista Rosedale Rio Bravo water. It's a water purchase agreement. The term is from 2007 to 2036. It kind of continues on with our state water contract extensions. The agreement will continue on as long as we keep updating our state water contract. It's for 11,000 acre feet of year, and this is every single year, no matter dry, no matter wet. We get this water, we pay for this water. It is from the Kern River, so it's non-project water. It doesn't fluctuate. It's a critical supply for us in dry years. And then as far as the costs go, in 2021, the cost for this water is about $888 per acre foot. And the price escalates each year, looking at the average consumer price index and state water project costs. So next slide, please. And I'm hearing some typing. I don't know if somebody is off of mute. Not me. So our next, I just want to kind of show you a graph of our water banking programs and the location in relation to the agency. So we participate in two water banking programs, Semi-Tropic Water Storage District and the Rosedale Rio Bravo Water Storage District, which are located about just west, northwest of Bakersfield. And then the red outline section is our service area. So these are Central Valley locations. Next slide, please. So I'm going to start with the Rosedale Rio Bravo Storage District Program. I like to call this RRB to shorten it up. We love those acronyms. Main thing about this program is our storage capacity is up to 200,000 acre feet, a cycle through program. So basically we put the water in, we take it out, and that's how we cycle through 200,000 acre feet. The maximum amount of storage at any given time that we can have banked is 100,000 acre feet. We currently have about 98,800 acre feet balance, so we're just about topped off. In normal years, when we have space, we can put up to 20,000 acre feet into this bank, and then we do lose 11% with a recharge loss. And then taking the water out or extraction capacity, we are contracted to take out 20,000 acre feet a year. But with our dry year extraction capacity currently, we can take generally around 10,000 acre feet a year. So there's a lot of factors there, but for us to get up to 20,000 acre feet a year, we would just need to dig some more wells and make more extraction capacity there. And all of that is included in the banking agreement. Next slide, please. So this is one I'm going to skim over pretty quickly. These are the costs to negotiate to get into the program. We've got the capital costs listed here, and then the usage fees. The usage fees all come out of the reserve fund. And just kind of so you know, we do have to pay to put water into the bank, and then we also have to pay to take the water out of the bank. And so that kind of lists some of our costs there. And again, the term for this RRB banking program is based on us cycling through 200,000 acre feet. Next slide, please. So our next program is the Semi-Tropic Stored Water Recovery Unit. This is another banking program. It's part of a larger water bank. There are 15 participants. Six were in the original group, and then there's nine of us in the Stored Water Recovery Unit, and that's kind of where we come in. Storage capacity wise, we're allowed to have up to 15,000 acre feet stored in this bank. And then we actually have an additional 31,000 acre feet stored there because prior to getting into this banking program, we did a couple of one-time storage agreements with them. So we have a total of about 40,000 acre feet currently available to us from that. We can put up to 5,000 acre feet into the bank, and we lose about 10% to the bank. And then we can take up to 5,000 acre feet a year as well. Next slide, please. Again, these are the costs related to that program. So you've got your capital and annual payments and our usage fees. The term of the contract is from 2015 to 2035, and then we do have an option for two 10-year extensions after that is up. So that takes us through build out at least, and then we'll go from there. Next slide, please. Next, I just wanted to quickly go through a couple of our water exchanges. In 2019, we did have a fairly wet year, so we were able to do a couple of water exchanges. This first one was with AVEC, where we did a 2-for-1 water exchange. We delivered them 7,500 acre feet. In return, they're going to send us 3,750 acre feet. The agreement says they'll return this water to us any year that there's more than a 30% allocation. But in 2020, just last year, they were actually able to return to us 1,500 acre feet to kind of help us out, seeing as we were having such shortages with our groundwater supplies. And the allocation was at 20%. So sometimes if you ask, they'll help you out. So we have about 2,200 acre feet left for them to return to us by 2029. Next slide, please. We did a similar exchange with United Water Conservation District in 2019, where we delivered them 1,000 acre feet, and so they owe us about 500 feet in return. They have the same rule where they will return us the water if the allocation is greater than 30%. But they also have a limitation that they're only able to return 500 acre feet a year max. This was kind of a proof of concept exchange that we did. So that's one of the reasons that it was a small amount. But so they have till 2029 to give us our 500 acre feet. Next slide, please. This is just a graph that kind of summarizes all those supplies. So starting the 2021 year, our balance with these dry year programs, as well as our carryover, is 155,000 acres. Next slide, please. So now for the information that you requested. 2020 water supply overview. So I'll take you back a little bit, but if you recall, Santa Clarita, we actually had about average precipitation in 2020, but statewide, it was a really dry year, especially for Northern California. So statewide, it was actually classified as a dry year. So that is why we had only a 20% allocation. And then as you recall, this is kind of when Mike turned off all the wells, so we can blame him, but we accepted that challenge and moved forward. Next slide, please. Our overall demand for 2020 was about 67,000 acre feet. This graph shows us our demands in comparison to some other years. We've got the blue bar, which represents our Saugus aquifer water. Our alluvial aquifer water is in the red, and then our imported water is in green, and then there's a sliver at the top of recycled water, but it's a really small amount. You'll note that for 2020, we did have a bit of a rebound, but it was pretty dry year. It was on record, it was one of the hottest years that's been recorded in California throughout the state, so that makes sense. And then we've had a lot of growth in the area as well. I noted to the Water Resources Committee, what I thought was interesting was the amount of groundwater that we used in 2019 and 2020 is pretty close, but we did that for two very different reasons. So in 2019, it was an extremely wet year. We had a 75% allocation. So we decided to lean more heavily on our imported sources that year to allow our groundwater to recover. So we backed off on our groundwater pumping to give it a bit of a break. And then come 2020, we are faced with all the PFAS challenges. A lot of our groundwater wells went off. So this is actually showing what we were able to pump with our groundwater. So just something interesting to note about this graph. Next slide, please. This is another fun bar graph. Clearly, I like stacked bar graphs, but I think they tell good stories. So how did we get through 2020? And this stacked bar graph is a lot of different colors. So I've basically taken the green bar from the last graph and broken it up into all of our different supplies. So this really shows you that we met our demands with almost all of our different dry year water supplies and other sources. Some things to highlight are the orange pieces of the bar were actually Rosedale Exchange water, We had about 14,500 acre feet of Rosedale exchange water available to us, and we were able to recover all of that water so that we weren't in need of the banked sources as much. We kind of want to save those banked sources for real emergencies, and so we try to get the exchange water first, and that was a huge feat coming from Rosedale. We were able to use our new drought wells to recover that water, and it really helped us out this year. We also, like I said, got a little bit of exchange water from AVEC, and we completed the exchange with West Kern Water District. So last year they owed us about 500 acre feet, and so that exchange is now over as they've given us our water back. So and then one last thing to note is in December, as we were getting towards the end of the year, you'll see there's a little bit of a peach bar there. And we decided to start pumping out of our Rosedale bank at the end of the year, just to make sure that we had a decent supply of carryover moving into 2021. So I want to give a kudos to the board for all their support and investments and all these dry year water supplies, because you could see that we really had to lean on all of those sources, and clearly all of those investments paid off. So thank you. Next slide, please. Overall, this is shows us kind of where we started with our dry year storage in 2020. This doesn't include our carryover supplies. So we started 2020 at about 165,000 acre feet in dry year storage with our banks and exchanges. And at the end of the year, or the beginning of this year, we're at about 142,000 acre feet. And so again, highlight that we utilized about 23,000 acre feet of dry year storage. And I think the bonus was that 72% of that water was exchange water and 28% were banked supplies. Next slide, please. So we're going to forget the past, and we're going to move on to the next year and all the challenges that are to come. Next slide, please. So what's happening in 2021 so far? So when we look at the drought classification, we started 2020 with this nice white map of California. Basically, the year started out pretty good, but only 3.5% of the state was classified as having any drought conditions. But after Northern California got hit with some really bad drought conditions, we started the 2021 water year October 1st with 85% of the state having some kind of drought classification. But you can see, as I said before, Santa Clarita had pretty average rain. So the central and southern coasts were not in any drought conditions. Next slide. So this shows us where we are now as of January. So from October to January, now we are 100% of the state is facing some sort of drought conditions. You can see LA is the kind of a partially square section that's right above where the yellow, the top of the yellow part of the map is. We are now at a D1 moderate drought classification. And unfortunately, it is a La Nina year, and the La Nina tends to keep Southern California fairly dry, and all the storms are pushed north, even sometimes above Northern California. So we don't really have a lot of perspective of that things are going to get better right now. I only anticipate, unfortunately, that this drought map may get worse, but hopefully Northern California may have some chance. Next slide, please. This is a map of SCV's precipitation so far this water year. I've got the yellow bars represent kind of where on average the amount of rain we get each month, and then the blue bar represents what we've actually gotten. So you can see we're really far behind. To date, we've had 1.18 inches of rain, and by the end of this month in January, which we've had none so far, we should be at about 8.75 inches of rain. So we're pretty far behind, but we do have some precipitation on the horizon, I think, coming next week. So fingers crossed that we may get some rain in January. Next slide, please. This is another, just another way to look at historical rainfall in Santa Clarita. The blue bar represents our wettest year on record. The green bar represents our average year. Purple was last year. And then the red bar is our driest year on record. Yellow is where we're at right now. So we're kind of trending with the driest year on record. And this record goes back to 1927. So almost 100 years of record. So hopefully we'll pop above the red. Next slide, please. This map is showing us a statewide summary of the snow water content. So a lot of our state water project water depends on our snow water content. And this map breaks it up into three sections, or this breaks the Sierras up into three sections and gives us percentages. So right now, the Northern Sierra is at about 57% of normal for this time of year. Central Sierra is at 51%, and then the Southern Sierra is really struggling with about 26% of normal to this date. So statewide, we're at about 48% of normal for this time of year with our snow water content, which is not. 3-month outlook for temperature and precipitation. Sorry, next slide, please. So on the left-hand side, I have a map of our outlook for temperature. The red indicates probability of warmer than average temperatures, and blue indicates cooler than average. So you can see basically the entire state of California is trending towards the warmer temperatures for the next 3 months. And then on the right-hand side, you've got precipitation outlook. Brown indicates drier than normal temperature, or drier than normal conditions, and green indicates wetter than normal conditions. So drier and warmer is our outlook through March. Next slide, please. So what are we going to do with all this uplifting information? We're going to create operating plans, and this is a pretty fun table that I like to walk you through. What this shows us is I've put together four different scenarios for 2021 with different allocations available. And then again, like I said, we look at 2022's worst case scenario with a 5% allocation and kind of build from there. So I'm going to walk us through our 10% allocation, which is indicated by the yellow column, and kind of talk you through this fun table. So for 2021, we're estimating about 70,000 acre feet of demand, and we're gonna start meeting that demand with our groundwater supplies. So we have just about 24,000 acre feet of groundwater supplies, and then you'll see that about 12,000 acre feet comes from the alluvial, and then there's another 12,000 acre feet coming from our Saugus supplies. As far as recycled water goes, we can expect about 450 acre feet of recycled water to help us out as well. So that leaves us with about 45,000 acre feet of imported demand. So then we go to our imported supply. We've got our table A at 10% allocation. That gives us about 9,500 acre feet to work with. And then we've got our Buena Vista, Rosedale, Rio Bravo, 11,000 acre feet that we know is guaranteed. So this is where that water comes in very handy. So our total imported supplies are about 20,000. So we're left with a shortage of about just under 25,000 acre feet. So that's when we dip into our dry year water supplies. So we're gonna start by looking at what do we have at carryover. So again, we have about 13,500 acre feet in carryover this year, but we don't want to use all of it because we may have another dry year next year. So we're going to try to use only about 7,000 acre feet of our carryover supply. And then we're going to go to our Rosedale banking program. We can expect to get, we're hoping to get about 10 to 13,000 acre feet of water from Rosedale. Again, I said we started pumping this water in December, so we've continued pumping it, and most likely we'll be pulling water from Rosedale at least through March until we get a better idea of the hydraulic conditions that we're facing this year. By pumping early, that means we potentially can get more than our 10,000 acre feet of recovery capacity. So the earlier we start, the more opportunity we have to maybe get some extra. So we'll be taking about 10 to 13,000 acre feet from Rosedale. We're also going to probably be taking 5,000 acre feet from our semi-tropic bank. And then we'll look at taking 1,000 acre feet from our Yuba Accord agreement, and then potentially another 1,000 acre feet from our state water contractors dry year water purchase program. So those are two programs that we can participate in if we want to purchase extra water. The only thing that really changes, if the allocation goes up, we use less of our banking supplies and dryer supplies, and we can lean more on table A. If the allocation goes down, what happens is we're going to try to recover even more from Rosedale. And then we may have to dip into our flexible storage account to just make up a little bit of extra water that we may need. The flexible storage account is water that's in Castaic Lake currently. We have 6,060 acre feet available. We can use it, but we need to put that water back. So we'd put it back within the next couple years. Next slide, please. This is a graphic that basically shows the operating plan just in a prettier way. You can see you've got each bar represents a different state water project allocation. We're currently where the star is at the 10%. And you can see that as the allocation increases to 50%, we start utilizing more table A in the orange. We have our Buena Vista water in gray. Our carryover water supply, we would probably use up to 30% allocation. And then our banked programs are in red. So as we get to 30% allocation, we don't need that banked program water anymore. We can use more table A. And then we've got our dry year water purchase and flexible storage in green and brown. So just another way of looking at an operating plan and what we're thinking. Next slide, please. This is a similar graph that I'd shown you before. So we started the year kind of at the middle bar with just about 142,000 acre feet in our dry year storage programs. And with a 5 to 10% allocation on the state water project supplies, we are estimating using up to 18,000 acre feet, which would take us to about 124,000 acre feet of dry year storage starting the next year. So still quite a nice supply to lean on if we need it. Next slide, please. All dry years take some budget. So I wanted to lay out kind of some budget estimates as we move into utilizing these programs. Rosedale program, again, we're looking at up to 13,000 acre feet from this program. It costs us about $80 per acre foot to get the water out of the bank. And so we're looking at about $1 million from that water. Our semi-tropic program, we're looking at taking about 5,000 acre feet, and the cost for that program is about $250 per acre foot, which takes us to about $1.25 million for that water. Dry year water purchase program, about 1,000 acre feet that we'll need at this time. That is still to be negotiated. Last year, it was negotiated at a cost of about $350 per acre foot, but it has ranged up to $500 per acre foot in the past. So that's kind of to be determined, and the year type makes a difference as well. And then we're looking at getting about 1,000 acre feet from our Yuba Accord program. As you recall, we amended the price schedule for this agreement last year. And so utilizing that price schedule and knowing that this will be a consecutive drier critical year, because last year was dry as well, the price of this water for component one, two, and component three is about $447 per acre foot. So that's just under $500,000 for that. We still have AVEC Exchange, United Water Conservation District Exchange, that has no cost associated with it if we can get that water, but because the allocation is low, it's most likely not available. New Holland and Farm or Five Point has water stored in the semi-tropic bank as well. And in the past, we have done an exchange with them where we gave them water, but we were also allowed to use their extraction capacity. And at that time in 2014, the price range was about $220 for the water we were able to recover. But if you take into account the water that we had to give them as well, the price was about $500 an acre foot. Most likely we would have to renegotiate something with them to use that extraction capacity again. And then nickel water is also available through Five Point. And I think that water is about $800 an acre foot. So kind of shows you the difference in the prices of all of our programs. But we are looking potentially at about, let's say, upwards of $3 million if we need all this water, since we don't have our dryer purchase program water listed yet. So that kind of rounds out that. Next slide. So we need to look at the bright side, because I know this was not exactly an uplifting presentation, but again, you know, considering all the challenges that we've faced with our local supplies in addition to all the dry years, we've really come, the efforts of these programs have really come through, and all the investments have been paying off, that we really have all the tools we need to get through these situations. So I want to thank the board again, and then I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thanks. And if I can just append that a little bit, Sarah, thanks so much for the presentation. We did make this at the request of a director, and I think we'll be making progress presentations, you know, a few months out as we get more information. We have kind of a time management problem tonight. We're 3 hours into the meeting, and we have attorneys who have been waiting to brief the board in closed session on two pieces of groundwater contamination litigation. So I had kind of conferred with President Martin while this was going on to see if we can move to that item next and maybe keep questions brief on this item, knowing that Sarah is here and in our time zone and can come back another time for any in-depth questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Matt. And I was going to say pretty much the same thing, that we are in a time situation with the attorneys that are standing by for closed session. So as soon as we wrap this up, we are going to leap ahead to item 11, then come back following closed session and finish out the remaining agenda items. But so I would ask, unless you have a burning question that must be answered tonight, I would ask your indulgence and either keep your questions short or postpone your questions to another time. So with that, I will just throw it open to the board. Instead of going down the list, are there any directors who have a burning question that must be answered tonight? Hearing none, I appreciate your cooperation, and I would ask, are there any public comments on the presentation that you just heard from Sarah Flory? Are there any public comments on this item before we take item 11 out of order?
Mr. Martin, this is Lynn Planbeck. I had my microphone off accidentally. I just wondered if Sarah couldn't come back at our next board meeting to answer questions. That was really a great presentation, and I do have some questions about it, but I will hold them if she could just come back. I love Sarah's presentations. They're just so, you know, they're so all-encompassing. Would that be possible?
Yes, it would. My thought, Director Planbeck, was we typically update this through the spring as the supply conditions become more apparent, and we could bring back both a Q&A and an update on where we are based on whatever the latest state project allocation is at that time.
Okay, and my one really burning question is, we used to do annual water supply reports, and it doesn't look like they've happened for a while. Or they're not on in the document library. I was just looking for it to look at some facts. Are they just not uploaded, or are we not doing them?
My We are still doing them, so I can send you, the last one we did was for 2019, and then we just started the scope of work with Ludorf and Scalmanini to cover 2020 reports. So mm-hmm. I can make sure that that's uploaded.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, if you could send me the 2019, I would appreciate it.
Okay.
All right, are there any other questions from directors before we skip ahead to item 11? All right, I've asked for public comment. I haven't heard any, so we are going to move to item 11 so that we can complete closed session while we still have access to the attorneys that are going to participate. So I would ask that we take just a couple of minute recess. I'll change over. You get out of GoToMeeting and use the dial-in number that was provided by April. We have two items on the closed session, 11.1 and 11.2. So I would, we are in very brief couple minute recess while you get set up for the call-in for the closed session. And please get out of GoToMeeting and then log back in when we're done. Thank you.
As I call your name, please say present. Director Planbeck, are you present? Director Bronstein, are you present? Director Atkins, are you present? Director Ozuhowski, are you present? Director Cooper, are you present?
I'm here.
You got a winner.
Yay, I know, I was excited. There's one. Director Colley, are you present? Director Armitage, are you present?
Present.
Let's go back up to Director Planbeck. Director Planbeck, are you present? Director Bronstein, are you present?
I see Director Planbeck, April.
Okay, so I just need her to respond. Director Atkins, are you present?
I'm on the phone, yes.
Thank you. Director Ostrakowski, are you present? Director Colley, are you present?
Detecting his speech.
He's speaking, but not coming through.
Okay, but you see him. Okay. Director Colley, are you present? Vice President Gladbeck, are you present?
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen, are you present?
Present.
Director Martin, President Martin, are you present?
I am present.
Let's go back up. Director Bronstein, are you present? Director Planbeck, can you hear me? Are you present? I know I see her name, but do you actually see her?
Sorry, I have my mic off. She may be frozen. I do see Director Bronstein has joined us.
Okay, I see she's waiting.
If you want to unmute
okay.
and say present.
I see her there. I switched my screen. Director Colley, are you present? I see his name, but there he is.
I am here.
Very good. Director Kelly, I know, is not back on. That does it. Back to you, President Martin. We have a quorum. We're just missing a few. Well, a few were here to begin with, so we're good.
Thank you, April. Before we go back up to item 7, I'll go to item 12 and ask Mr. Byrne for closed session announcements.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. I'll just report that there was no action that was taken during closed session, and that's reportable pursuant to the Brown Act.
All right. I suppose I need to ask any public comment on the closed session item.
Just one moment, President Martin, to unmute. Okay. Any closed session or any public comments? Does not appear that there are any.
Very good. Hearing none, we can go back up to item 7, General Manager's Report on Activities, Projects, and Programs. Mr. Stone.
It's been very busy. More next time.
All right. Is that
that concludes my report.
All right. Well, we do have a couple of items we need to take care of in item 8. Item 8.1, this is the board consideration and approval of continuing the suspension of limitation of single day events through June 2021. As you
Jerry,
may... Yes. As you may recall, last year when we realized that COVID was not going to go away anytime soon and we wouldn't be attending in-person events for the rest of the year, we agreed to suspend the limitation on single day events, but it only extended to the end of the year. So here we are in January of 21. We are actually operating under the original terms of the policy that we all passed and agreed to. So I think we're also in a continuing situation where the COVID is not going away anytime soon. We won't be going to in-person events for the foreseeable future. I can't imagine when we're going to restart in-person events. So I would like to open it for discussion amongst the directors on whether we want to continue the suspension of limitations or whether we want to adopt a modified version of that. I would like to have at least some modified version of it, but I would ask, open up to the board to discuss what we'd like to do with this.
I'm sorry to interrupt you while I go, Gary.
It's okay, Jerry. Maybe at this late hour, I can just... yeah. I'll just start with the continuation of the suspension of limitation on single day events. I'd like to extend it at least for the end of the... I think I'd like to extend it into to the end of the first half of the year through June.
I would motion on that, Gary.
Yes. Go ahead.
I'd move it.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, please. Is this Kathy?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes. So the question I have is, was the purpose of suspending the limitation because the single day events are cheaper? What's the idea behind that? I'm not understanding.
That was a factor, Kathy. But more importantly, I thought that being in the COVID lockdown, it was limiting our ability to interact with our colleagues around Southern California and around the state, for that matter. And we were lacking involvement with others in the water industry. And I thought to encourage our directors to participate in more of the virtual events that we could suspend the one event per month limit and encourage greater participation.
And some of the multi-day...
Thank you for explaining
some of the some of the multi-day events turned out to be mini one-day events.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and then in addition to that, we're not incurring the travel and hotel costs that we normally would with the multi-day. So this shouldn't be a budgetary issue. It's more of just making sure that there's adequate circulation and awareness of both water industry and our community type events as well.
So I think we now have a motion and a second.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Any questions?
President Martin, who was the second? Okay, thank you.
All right. Any other questions from directors before I ask for public comment? Hearing none, is there any member of the public who would like to comment on this before we continue discussion and call for the vote? Hearing no public comment, we have a motion and a second. Madam Secretary, will you call the roll?
Director Armitage, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Cooper, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Ozachowski, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Plambeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Kelly, how do you vote? Director Kelly's not on. Director Colley, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Atkins, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Bronstein, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Mortensen, how do you vote?
No.
Vice President Gladbeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
President Martin, how do you vote?
Yes.
This item passes. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd also like to cover item 8.2, but my presentation on item 8.2 was based on General Manager Stone making some comments during his manager's report.
Yeah, I forgot about that. The length of the meeting kind of wore my brain down.
Could we just do it briefly and give some background before I begin my very brief presentation?
Yeah, and again, my apologies. No wonder you're giving me that strong hint. So you may recall a couple of months ago, for those who were attending meetings towards the end of the year, SCV Water approved, I think it was before the beginning, or maybe it was with the new board. It's just too late. But anyway, we approved the next kind of round of participation in the planning process for the Delta Conveyance Facility. We also approved a revised entering into a joint powers agency that exists, or joint powers authority that exists, which is the DCA, or the Delta Design and Construction Authority, which is comprised of agencies that are potentially participating in the project and are participating in, at this stage in the planning and environmental work for the project. That DCA joint powers agreement was approved by the board as well. And there were a number of changes from the original agreement, which had an original group of kind of core members, I guess, Metropolitan, Kern, Santa Clara, a few others. And that membership has been expanded to better represent all of the potential participants who have expressed interest in the Delta Conveyance Project. And as part of that, there is a board representation structure, which has 7 seats. And Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency shares a seat with between 2 and 4 other agencies, depending on ultimate participation. Based on how that agreement is structured, the agency essentially has the ability to choose the primary director, and then there's another agency, Dudley Ridge, that can choose a backup or trying to remember the term of art, alternate director that can serve in the absence of the primary. And so at this time, the body will be meeting for its first meeting in 2021 in February. They canceled the January meeting to allow everybody to deal with the appointment and designation of a representative. And it is incumbent on the agency to inform them of that appointment. That can just simply come as a letter from me. I've consulted with President Martin and shared the kind of the nature of that role. It's a body that has about one to two meetings a month, one standing meeting. There may be other meetings periodically. It essentially provides oversight and a public Brown Act face for the construction authority that is working with DWR to jointly pursue the technical work for CEQA and then ultimately design and construction of the facility if it were to go forward. Is that better?
That's better. Yes. So
completely forgot.
So because I began my presentation with as Manager Stone reported, so I needed to have Manager Stone report something. So thank you very much. All right. So when Matt informed me of the need for this, he also provided his assessment of the experience and background that would be useful and important for the position. I also confirmed with General Counsel that the board president can make the appointment and board approval is not required. I then shared all of this information with Vice Presidents Gladbach and Mortensen and with past President Cooper. And after conferring with each of them, there was a 4-0 consensus that I was best suited for the position. So this is to advise you that I will be filling this appointed seat and Mr. Stone will be notifying the DCA board as such. So this concludes my brief report, and unless there are any questions from the board. All right. Hearing none, I will go ahead and finish up the president's report. There is a special virtual board meeting on February 1st, 2021 at 6 p.m. for sexual harassment prevention training. This is a mandatory training for all directors. And then we have some other meetings to update you on. The SCB Chamber of Commerce 98th Awards and Installation Virtual Dinner on January 28th from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. And then the Urban Water Institute Spring Virtual Conference 2021 Virtual Conference is February 17th and 18th. And please let the board secretary know if you would like to attend any of the events. That concludes the president's report. Are there any public comments with regard to item eight, president's report?
I would like to report. This is Joan Dunn.
Hello.
I'd like to ask you something on 8.2.
Yes.
Do you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Okay. I wanted to ask you if there's these conveyance, Delta Conveyance Design and Construction Authority. You said something about Brown Act issues are apparently involved in this. Do they have meetings where they actually have the public can actually hear or view how these are going? I have, being how they are under a Brown Act situation, I would think that the public would be involved. Do you know if these are televised or however the public can view these? Is that happening?
Well, at present, as far as I know, they are held virtually, and the public is invited. There's public input. There's public participation. Is that correct, Mr. Stone?
That is correct, yes. And I believe I've seen cameras set up for the meeting. I'm not sure if they're live or if they're recording, but they do have public participation. It is run just like one of our board meetings with a noticed agenda and a chair that runs the meeting and public comment opportunity during the meeting.
Okay, I'm back again. I have one more question. How would I be able to get that information if I wanted to maybe be involved in that?
Okay, well, Joan, I could send you a link to their webpage, and they publish their schedule and packets there. That would probably be the most efficient way.
Oh, that would be good. Thank you very much.
Okay, you bet.
Thank you, Ms. Dunn. Any other member of the public who would like to comment on item eight? Hearing none, we can move to item nine, AB 1234 reports. Are there anyone who would like to make an AB 1234 report? Hearing none, we can move to item 10, director reports. Does anyone have a director report they'd like to give? All right, we have taken care of item 11, closed session. We're on to item 11 and 12. So item 13, director requests for approval for event attendance. Are there any requests for event attendance? Hearing none. Item 14, requests for future agenda items.
This is Lynn Planbeck. I so much appreciated having the agenda item tonight that I had requested. I also requested that we discuss a possible rate for I forgot what it's called, Lifeline rate, and that did not. And your suggestion was to have it on the outreach committee, but it did not appear on the outreach committee agenda. So I am requesting it again, and I will discuss why it didn't, when I go to the outreach committee, why it didn't appear there. But I just want to say that it did not appear on the outreach committee, and it's really, really an important issue. So I am requesting again that it appear on somewhere. Thank you.
Lynn, this is Jerry. I talked with Steve on it. He's trying to get more background, and although it won't be on this week's meeting, it will be in next month's meeting.
Okay, because it's really an important thing, and it was Aqua suggested that we should have it, and we need to start working on the legislation. So it's important that it shows up somewhere.
Right, we understand that. Yeah, thanks, Lynn.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
I have one question.
Yes, is this Kathy?
Yes, sorry. Yes, Kathy. So I don't know if this would be an agenda item to request or if this just would be a discussion with anybody in the agency, but I'm curious if we need to be concerned about the water quality in the schools, since many of the schools have been shut down for a period of time, or at least they're only being partially used. So when our children do go back to school, we want to make sure that it's safe for them to be drinking the water out of the fountains. Since we know that buildings that are closed for long periods of time and have the stagnant water can have water quality issues. So I'm not quite sure how to approach that or how to request that information.
Mr. Yeah,
I think we could agendize it. However, probably the direct approach would be there is guidance for reopening buildings that has been put out by the CDC and the health department, as well as I think possibly AWWA. What I could do is work with Mike and Kathy to see what we could do to focus some communication towards the school districts. We have some relationship with them because of the lead testing that we did under state law recently. So there's a little better foundation there than we strictly had. So I'm not sure if it needs to be agendized or maybe we could take that as a good suggestion and then report back to our ops committee as we implement that. Either way, we could tee it up and make a presentation to the board, but it sounds like the communication needs to happen between us and the school districts at the operating level.
All right. How's that work, Kathy?
Sure. I mean, whatever. I just want to make sure it gets addressed. So however you think you want to work that best is fine with me.
Okay. I'd be happy to talk with sorry. Who's that guy that does our water operations? Mike Calvert. and Kathy, and we'll get that on the list. I think that's a good suggestion. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Are there any other requests for future agenda items?
Yeah, one request.
Go ahead, Peter.
All right, I was wondering if the staff can present a basic financial statement. Not a financial statement, but operating costs, capital improvement project costs as they were in 2020, and then have a side operating costs for each of the successive years that we're going to be installing the PFAS facilities to see how much possibly short we are in each year. Not showing any kind of funding or grants that are going to be provided to us for those facilities. Just using capacity fees and retail rates.
So you said quite a bit, Peter.
Let me rephrase. Go ahead, President Martin.
I was going to ask, is that information currently in the budget document, or is that someplace available from our
So what you saw tonight was the first look at that comprehensive study that projects O&M and capital costs for PFAS out. We have in the rate process at the Finance Committee, we presented how the O&M costs look. We put in a caveat that the capital costs will depend on how we decide to finance them, whether we're paying them out of pocket, whether we're financing them, whether we're using revolving fund loans. So those costs could look a little bit different. What I would suggest is we're bringing a rate presentation to the board at the next meeting. It's the presentation that came out of finance with some revisions based on the input we got at the Finance Committee. There'll be some additional information as well. I think we could present what those PFAS impacts are in isolation, if that would help address the need that you have, Director Roskowski.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm looking for, impact. See how short we are based on how the agency operates in 2019 and 2020.
Okay.
Very good. Are there any other requests for future agenda items? I would ask, are there any public comments about item 14, requests for future agenda items? Hearing none, we can move to item 15, adjournment. Tonight, we have a very sad announcement. For those of you who may not know, our general counsel, Joe Byrne, lost his mom very recently. I'm not sure, Joe, when it actually happened or whether it's even important, but I would like to adjourn this meeting in memoriam of Marguerite Chicky Byrne, Joe Byrne's mom.
Thank you, President Byrne. It's nice. It was on Sunday.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
And please accept our condolences.
I appreciate it.
All right. And with that, we're adjourned. Thank you all. You beat the record from last meeting, actually later. At one point, I'm going to have to ask, if we go over midnight, does that mean we have two stipends? So.
Provide a legal opinion.